Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're watching and listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, my very special guest is Colin Wolford. Colin is a dedicated UFO researcher of some 30 plus years. He has a particular interest in UFO crash retrievals, aliens, and the crop circle phenomenon. He has given lectures on the connection to art through films and music and the UFO subject, as well as on the alien autopsy footage conspiracy. Colin has worked now for over 30 years for a major international airline and is currently based at Heathrow Airport. So without any further ado, Colin, welcome to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Hi James, it's really great to be here, and I appreciate you reaching out to me to talk about this fascinating subject, which has been around now for, I mean, there's people who aren't even born, in their, literally 30 years old, almost, and they may not have even been around when this story came out in 1995. It was quite a big deal. I don't know how much you're familiar with the story at the time and that, but it's certainly been very much within my most as a researcher, like I say, like on the intro for 33 years. It's been one of my favorite subjects because I was quite heavily involved with studying it at the time, and still am, and I have my own Facebook group, which is called Alien Autopsy Analysis. So I mean, if you talk about the alien autopsy, I mean the name that's associated with that was is the name of someone called Ray Santilli, and I guess for people who don't know, just some basics about him. He is of Italian descent. He was born in September '58. He was kind of like a British. He's involved in the music industry. He was a record and film producer. He started in the media 1978. He had some connections with the Walt Disney Audio Library, 1985. 91, he found a group, a Merlin, the group called the Merlin Group. They were involved in re recording hits with like original artists. It's an interesting connection here with a band called the Troggs, which we'll get into, and the whole crop circle and UFO aspect connected to the alien autopsy. He also, in 1995, he founded an Orbital Media Group, a film and television production company. He's also a producer for what many consider one of the worst songs of all time here in England, which I don't know if it ever came over to America, but it was a song, you can look it up on YouTube, it was called The Birdie Song, and it was by this band called The Tweets, and they kind of like dressed up as birds basically on stage. And yeah, that's quite a dreadful song, but you kind of get an idea that he was involved in the music industry. And what was interesting then is in this story, we pick it up in 1992, and we're looking at sort of the July the 4th weekend in Cleveland, Ohio. So Ray and he had a business partner called Gary Shoefield, and they came over visiting, and they were looking for like music memorabilia, just because they were looking to license bits and pieces. And I think back then, of course, this is a pre-internet age you're talking about. I think the internet was really started maybe 94, 95, coming into that more popular. It was really kicking off then. So this was a time when you had to put articles in newspapers and, to tell people that you're interested in maybe music magazines, and like sort of sell people who would sell items, and you just put adverts in newspapers. So basically what happened was they were going over to this to meet up with certain dealers selling these music memorabilia, and they were looking for various clips, things like Elvis. There was a DJ, Bill Randall, was said to have sold them some actual footage, Ray and Gary, of Elvis from a concert in Cleveland in 1955, which was a music documentary. Now, apparently the cameraman of this famous alien autopsy footage, his son, because as I understand it, the cameraman himself lived in Clearwater, Florida, and I believe his son lived in Cleveland, Ohio. So, the son of the cameraman saw Ray's advert in a local paper requesting old movie footage, and the cameraman he or at least whether it was his son or someone connected with him, which we can go into later, he said after making a sale of some of his footage, would he be interested in something else? And apparently, this was referred to as a Roswell film material. And this is one of the big confusions on the story because it was marketed as such as being of a crash in 1947. But as it would later transpire, if you believe the cameraman's story, that this was actually a crash that actually predated Roswell. We assume that Roswell was like early July 1947. This crash, according to the cameraman, first came down 31st of May 1947. And a clear-up operation began June 1st, 2nd, around that period. So there is some confusion in that, and you could put that down to sort of people didn't know about many of the crash, various crashes. And of course, Roswell is a famous one. And I think there is some confusion also because I think the cameraman allegedly flew into one of the Roswell air base. So you can see why that may have been associated with it, but it was supposedly at a place in Socorro called Noble Canyon. And then we can talk a bit more about that. But there is a very interesting statement, which I'm going to read about the alleged cameraman actually said. So basically, Ray flew all the way to Clearwater, Florida, if you believe the official story, to actually view this. You know, it's a shocking thing. Someone says an alien autopsy. You know, they got footage of it. I mean, Ray didn't know nothing about UFOs. He wasn't into the subject as such. You know, it just seems a shocking thing to actually say. So when he got there, apparently the cameraman, he had like one of his old projector films, and and he projected it on the side of his wall. He had these canisters. Apparently, he had like 23 or 25 canisters under in stored away somewhere, whether it was under his bed or maybe somewhere more secure. I'm thinking maybe more secure, but so Ray viewed this footage of the alien autopsy and possibly other bits and pieces. Now, mention has been made also of a crash site with cranes and a recovery team, and these entities screaming and holding down devices, and even Truman expecting a scene or at least behind the viewing video. And this is one of the other controversial aspects of this case. So, well, I'm just going to read to you because I do feel it's important, and I do always do this when I give my talk. It's been a while since I've given it, but I'm going to talk. Well, this is the cameraman's statement, and I do feel it's important just to get an idea of what allegedly the cameraman said when they marketed this film. And he refers to this, the cameraman story, as Operation Anvil, which we can find no record of, but maybe that's no surprise.
And
Anyway, so operate.
just to interject real
Yeah.
quick, Colin, was
Sure.
this cameraman Army Air Forces
Yeah,
before
I
the
mean, I
Air
guess it
Force had
was
broken off,
before.
or okay?
Yeah, no, this was even before that happened. So it was in that point where the Army and the Air Force became separate. I mean, back then it was just kind of like the army, and I believe towards the end of, was it July, and the CIA was formed and all this stuff. But
Yeah.
may have been one of the reasons why he was able, allegedly, to keep the film. He actually says that. I think he actually refers to this in his statement,
Okay,
how
cool. Go
some
ahead.
confusion. But yeah, they kind of like split then to the army and air force. But back then it was just like the army, I guess. So okay, so this is his story, and he says, I joined the forces in March of 1942 and I left in 52. So he only had like a 10-year career there. The 10 years I spent serving my country were some of the best years of my life. My father was in the movie business, which meant he had a good knowledge about the workings of cameras and photography. For this reason, I believe I passed a medical that would not normally allow me in due to polio as a child. After my enrollment and training, I was able to use my camera skills and become one of the few dedicated cameramen in the forces. I was sent to many places, and as it was wartime, I first learned the ability of filming under difficult circumstances. I will not give more detail on my background, only to say that in the fall of 1944, I was assigned to intelligence, reporting to the Assistant Chief of Air Staff. I was moved around depending on the assignment. During my time, I filmed a great deal, including the tests at White Sands. That's the Manhattan Project, Trinity Project. I remember very clearly receiving the call to go to White Sands, and then got brackets Roswell. I had not long returned from St. Louis, Missouri, where I had filmed the new ramjet, Little Henry, which I think is a kind of like helicopter, early helicopter. It was June 1st when McDonald asked me to report to General McMullen for special assignment. I had no experience of working with McMullen, but after talking to him for a few minutes, I knew that I would never wish to be his enemy. McMullen was straight to the point, no messing. I was ordered to a crash site just southwest of Socorro, It was urgent, and my brief was to film everything in sight, not to leave the debris until it had been removed, and I was to have access to all areas of the site. The commander in charge had a problem with that. I was told to get them to call McMullen. A few minutes after my orders from McMullen, I received the same instructions from Toohey, another famous general, saying it was a crash of a Russian spy plane. Two generals in one day, this job was important. I flew out from Andrews with 16 other officers and personnel, mostly medical. We arrived at Wright-Patterson and collected more men and equipment. From there, we flew to Roswell on a C-54. When we got to Roswell, we were transported by road to the site. When we arrived, the site had already been cordoned off. From the start, it was plain to see this was no Russian spy plane. It was a large disc, flying saucer on its back, with heat still radiating from the ground around it. The commander on the site handed over to the SAC medical team, who were still waiting for Kenny to arrive. However, nothing had been done, as everyone was just waiting for orders. It was decided to wait until the heat subsided before moving in, as fire was a significant risk. This was made all the worse by the screams of the freak creatures that were lying by the vehicle. What in God's name they were, no one could tell, but one thing's for sure, they were circus freaks, creatures with no business here. Each had held hold of a box which they kept hold of in both arms close to their chests. They just lay there crying, holding those boxes. Once my tent had been set up, I started filming immediately, first the vehicle, then the site and debris. Around 6 a.m. it was deemed safe to move in. Again, the freaks were still crying, and when approached, they screamed even louder. They were protective of their boxes, but we managed to get one loose with a firm strike at the head of a freak with the butt of a rifle. The three freaks were dragged away and secured with rope and tape. The other one was already dead. The medical team were reluctant at first to go near these freaks, but as some were injured, they had no choice. Once the creatures were collected, the priority was to collect all debris that could be removed easily, as there was still a risk of fire. This debris seemed to come from exterior struts that were supporting a very small disc on the underside of the craft, which must have snapped off when the disc flipped over. The debris was taken to tent stations for logging, then loaded onto trucks. After 3 days, a full team from Washington came down, and the decision was taken to move the craft. Inside it, the atmosphere was very heavy. It was impossible to stay in longer than a few seconds without feeling very sick. Therefore, it was decided to analyze it back at the base. So it was loaded onto a flat top and taken to Wright-Patterson, which is where I joined it. I stayed at Wright-Patterson for a further 3 weeks working on the debris. I was then told to report to Fort Worth in Dallas for the filming of an autopsy. Now, normally I would not have a problem with this, but it was discovered that the freaks may be a medical threat. Therefore, I was required to wear the same protective suits as the doctors. It was impossible to handle the camera properly. Loading and focusing was very difficult. In fact, against orders, I removed my suit during the filming. The first two autopsies took place in July of 1947. After filming, I had several hundred reels. I separated the problem reels, which was required special attention in processing. These I would do later. The first batch was sent through to Washington, and I processed the remainder a few days later. Once the remaining reels had been processed, I contacted Washington to arrange collection of the final batch. Incredibly, they never came to collect or arrange transportation for them. I called many times and they just gave up. The footage has remained with me ever since. In May of 1949, I was asked to film the third autopsy. So that's the cameraman's statement. And I always feel like I have to say that because a lot of people may not be aware that when Ray marketed this film, which
That's the first I've
international
ever
show.
heard of it. Let me just
Oh,
interject really quick.
really?
Yeah, that's the first I've ever heard of it. A couple of points to elucidate. Toohey Spots was the chief of staff of the Air Force at the time, the Army Air Force, before they broke off with the National Security Act. McMullen was the chief of staff for Strategic Air Command, General Clements McMullen, and his boss was General George Kenney, who was at the time Commander of Strategic Air Command, later succeeded by General Curtis LeMay. Now, you mentioned earlier these initials. Did you say SEC or AEC?
SAC, I think that
Oh,
stands
SAC,
for
Strategic Air Command.
Sorry, yeah, I may have put
Yes,
that abbreviation wrong
at the
when I read
time,
it out.
interject. At the time, General Kenny was commander of Strategic Air Command. His deputy was Clement McMullen. So the time
Excellent.
frame is absolutely correct. So please continue.
Cool. Can you see that picture on the screen? Can you see that?
Not yet. Go ahead and
Oh,
hit
okay.
the
Let me
screen
just.
share. And it's important for people to understand that there were some crash retrievals prior to the famous Roswell event. 1942, Cape Girardeau, Missouri. I've had Paul Blake Smith on my show, who's written a book about the 1942 crash retrieval. And also in Timothy Good's great book, Above Top Secret, The Worldwide UFO Cover-Up, some of the sources mentioned in that book describe crash retrievals prior to Roswell. So this is an important point to make. Yes,
Can you see
General,
that? There
yes,
you
thank
go.
you. Yeah, General Toohey, that's
Sorry.
Carl Toohey Spots. He was commanding General Army Air Force, 1947.
Yeah.
He succeeded General Henry Arnold. So yes, excellent.
So it's very interesting because when we get onto the hoax aspect of the story later on, the guy claimed the hoax, he distanced himself from this statement from the cameraman that this wasn't something he made up. So it's kind of, it makes you think that, well, there's actually some sort of inner knowledge and like the knowledge of the, even like TUI and knowing these sort of finer details and things like that. But anyway, I'll get back to what I was next relevant piece in this story. So he'd seen this footage and I'm going to play just a video actually now. Well, there's another picture actually. I could share that just because it's of the that's again another image of, oh, it's the Strategic Air Command. There you go, George G. Kenney. But what's very interesting in this case is it was, I don't know if you remember watching The Fact or Fiction. There was a huge TV show that came out August 28th, 1995, and it was a Robert Kiviat production called, well, Alien Autopsy, Fact or Fiction. And that was broadcast August 28th. It is around the world. It was shown everywhere.
Just a little background on General George Kenney. He was commander of the 5th Air Force under General MacArthur during World War II. And after World War II, he became commander for a short time of Strategic Air Command.
Yeah. And can you see this picture of Reg? I
Reg,
think,
Busty, and Philip, yes.
yeah, that's it. So Philip Bans was one of the, he was one of the main researchers back in the day of the alien autopsy, along with Michael Hessman. You may know, I don't know, but Michael's sort of taken a sort of back seat regarding the UFO subject. But the guy in the center, that's Busty Taylor. He would fly people over crop circles when the crop circle phenomena really kicked off, like 1990. People may remember that Led Zeppelin cover and for the greatest hits. And then Reg on the left, who was the lead singer of the Trogs, he was, getting really into the UFO subject. And he'd actually known Ray Santilli from his workings with him. There's just a little few details there about Reg Presley. People want to just pause that, but he did. He made a huge lot of money back in, they re-released a song, which is Love Is All Around by Band Here. It went absolutely crazy. It was like number one for 15 weeks. And he, a lot of that money he generated, he actually put into research, into crop circles. But what was interesting is Reg's manager contacted Ray Santilli around this, just before this Alien Autopsy film would come out. Because going back to the cameramen, obviously Ray wanted to, he was sort of spellbound after having watched this footage in this house in Florida Clearwater. And but he didn't have the money, because so basically the story is the cameraman wanted to raise money for, I believe it is, his granddaughter's wedding. There's some debate about how much this footage actually cost in the end, whether it was like 100 $1,000. So.
And I must say at this point that I feel sorry for Ray Santilli for what he has endured. He had no idea he was walking into the
No,
miasmic
exactly.
minefield of the UFO buffoonery, because the UFO community, well, some elements of it, regarded him as an outsider, the same way that archaeologists look down upon people with a metal detector who not only find coins but find, ancient settlements. That's not good enough for them because, these people with metal detectors aren't real archaeologists. The same kind of disdainful attitude was meted out towards Ray Santilli. You're not a real UFO researcher. What are you doing here? This is a hoax. And so he stepped into a minefield, but what he did, the effort of putting this information out, he has my admiration.
Well, he was saying like how he met the cameraman. As the story I was telling, I mean, Colin was quite convinced. I mean, there's more to this story because Colin had actually seen another autopsy. A lot of people don't know this, but there was actually two autopsies. I mean, he had like literally. So the famous autopsy film was like I think 15 minutes nearly long or so, but there was another autopsy that was shown in. Now the first autopsy was only seen by a number of researchers. So you had people like Maurizio Boiato, who's a famous Italian researcher. You had Philip Manton and his wife saw this piece of footage. Colin Andrews saw this, and Reg Presley, who you just saw in that clip. And this was actually they saw this clip, interestingly enough, before the main. The famous autopsy film. So they actually, in April of 1995, towards the end of April, they were invited into that very same office and they actually saw this other autopsy, which was far more graphic, more cleaner. And it was actually featured a gynecological examination of this being. And I know we just briefly, maybe, I mean, people are probably familiar with this footage. If you want to watch it, you can just go onto YouTube, it's all free. Just go type in Alien Autopsy Orbital Media, which is Ray's company. You can watch that footage. And what's unusual about the being on, as you see it, is that it's got six fingers. Now, if you go back to the Roswell confusion, I mean, some people who did say that they saw some beings and they referred to four fingers. So this kind of goes into that story of how confusing it was when they marketed it. And, they were showing witnesses of Roswell, this alien autopsy footage, because it didn't sort of align with what they were seeing. But this made sense if you looked. A lot of people, like you said, you weren't aware of the cameraman's story. That story was actually he actually said it was May 31st of this crash in Socorro at Noble Canyon, which we sort of we even had someone Ed Gurman who did some very good research on the crash site there. Yeah, so. This first autopsy, it was a lot of people don't know about this, that there's a whole other it just disappeared off the face of the earth. So now there's some claim that the money that was used to Ray that Ray needed this $100,000 or whatever, there was a guy called Volker Spielberg, who was a German okay, again involved in the music industry, and he it said that he would put up a lot of this money. He lived, I believe, in Germany or Austria at the time, maybe Austria actually. And he put a lot of money up, and it said that he actually kept this footage for himself of the first autopsy, but it was slightly lot more graphic. And you may remember if you watched the Alien Autopsy Fact and Fiction with Jonathan Frakes on Star Trek, that they digitized over, like the pubic region of the being because it looked like it was female in that it had a vagina, basically. So, and even though you couldn't really see any breasts as such, there was no belly button there. So that kind of got into a whole other story about how these beings are they, clone type beings. I should actually comment on the footage itself because there's, it's a remarkable thing, just to, talk about it. But if you can actually watch it, the being that we do see in the second autopsy, the leg is, it was seen to be. Some sort of impact on the right leg where its leg is partially destroyed. There is claims that if they listen to the cameraman's story, they said that one of the soldiers hit the creature on the butt of the head with his rifle, and this was to get the panels, these six finger panels, which you may have seen the debrief footage. It says connect with Ray sort of marketed that a few months around that same period, August. But so there is sort of a match with that. that story there, that these creatures were, you know, screaming, crying onto these objects. But there was also the claim that one of the soldiers may have actually shot that right leg of the being, and that may be it could partially be down to, it looks almost like a burn wound as well, so it could possibly to do with the crash. And also the right hand is partially severed, which, you know, if you're going to hoax something, it's very hard. You know, why would you go to all this effort, you know? And another thing is, obviously the six fingers is very interesting, six toes, and we're going to have Roger Lear. I'm going to play a little video which is very interesting from the late Roger Lear. But you'd have to ask yourself, why would you go to all this trouble to hoax something with all the materials of that time? Because again, if you watch the footage, you can see materials, autopsy tools, microphone hanging down. You know, there's certainly a lot of stuff in that room. It does link it to 1947. One of the big controversies was over the phone. It had a curly wire phone on it, and one of the big debates was, oh, well, that's clearly not from the 1940s. But it was actually found that they think they brought these in military places. It was like an extension with a curly wire, and that you could actually in some cars, apparently. I mean, there's some photos in some of the books that have come out over the years. So that, everything matches of that time. But going back to the being, it was very much had a distended stomach. Now some people speculated that this was, you know, the beings were pregnant or stuff, but this was clearly not long after death. They were doing these autopsies, and if, you know, the feeling is that air had either entered into the stomach and had caused that sort of bloating to appear. I think the camera referred to the autopsies happening in late July. So possibly one was dead at the crash site and three was still alive. Two possibly survived a couple of weeks, and then if we believe the autopsies were done in July, I reckon. I'm not a pathologist or surgeon, but I have watched lots of autopsies since studying the subject, and you know, it's quite a gruesome thing. But they may have had to do these autopsies very quickly because also you're dealing with, you know, off-world beings, and you want to, I suppose, access the sort of body and the organs while fresh, you know, within, you know, hours of dying, literally. There is a sign in the room. There's a danger sign, which is one of the most interesting parts of the footage for me, because it says, I think we've kind of narrowed it down. It does definitely say maximum working time. And then it says, I think it's possibly 2 hours. It may be another number on there, but it says maximum working time, like two hours, let's say. But it was also a little bit of in almost like a phone number, and I'm not sure if this has ever been clarified what's on the bottom right of that danger. It's like a, you know, the famous danger signs you get in America. But there's lots of these little bits in the film that make it very interesting. Like there's a viewing window where obviously the surgeons, because later it's found out that generally that the people who are the experts, like Cyril Vect, who you may know, who investigated the JFK autopsy and things like that. He was on this air fractal friction show, and you know, he for him it looked, you know, he's saying, I think he was one of the people who said it looked more like surgeons rather than pathologists doing the procedure. But it's certainly no organs he'd ever seen, like the brain matter. I mean, you can actually see them using tools like a hacksaw to saw through the brain, and it is very graphic. And if you're not used to watching a dead body, I mean, I've seen some since, like human autopsies, and you know, once that spark of life has gone out of the body, your body is almost like a mannequin. You know what I mean? It doesn't look real. It's like it's you know, for instance, if you've got a loved one and you think, well, that's not my, you know, my love, you know, my mum or whatever, because that spark of life has gone, and it does look very much like a sort of mannequin type thing. So unless you're used to looking at that, I mean, it is very graphic, and it was coming. I mean, a lot of people were quite generally freaked out by it, because in England, when they first showed it, they showed it at the Museum of British Music at the one, I think it was Museum of Moving Image or something in England on May 5th, 1995. This was one of the first showings they had of it when Ray had actually got it, brought the film over, because it took him a couple of years. I have to remember, we go back to 92. The story was that he then was trying to raise some funds. On that video we just saw of Ray Santilli, he actually said that the cameraman gave him a bit of the leader and a couple of stills, which I actually, a lot of people had never actually asked him that before. And I've had my own correspondence with Ray, and I'll get onto that maybe later. But it's interesting to think that he would obviously have bought something back just to raise money, because it's very much easy saying, "Can you give me $100,000 because I want to market an alien autopsy?" But unless you've got proof, so I mean, it's a very interesting. I don't think anyone's actually officially asked Ray what images he actually bought back to sort of convince someone that he actually, this film was genuine. And was it just a piece of the film? Or was it, did it actually even have an image of the being on it? Because there's another whole controversy here. And I'm aware that we've talked for quite a bit already, and there's so much more to say. Okay. But yeah, I mean, I suppose the other thing on the video of the autopsy would be, to say that it was definitely alien, other than six fingers, would be obviously a small nature, but also, the eyes, when the famous scene where like they take a remover lens from the eye. In Philip Corso's book, The Day After Roswell, he actually seems to refer to this lens thing that they found in some of these beings. And I guess, I mean, although he came out a couple of years after this footage, I think his book came out in 97, but he refers to like having one of these lenses, and they would use it as like a night vision thing, because apparently when you look through it, you could actually see in the dark, so
Yeah, with some kind of
it's kind of
image
very
intensifier.
interesting. Yeah, and I think a lot of people up till this point in 95, when there had been descriptions of these black-eyed beings, people weren't kind of thinking that that was actually, they thought that was pretty much their eyes. Whereas if you when you watch the footage itself, you see the removal, and you can see the eyeball rolled up into the head, and it's a huge iris. It's kind of it's this is a hoax,
Yes,
I
and
always say
rolled
this.
back into the eyes too, and the sclera, the
Yeah.
white part, there's a very large white
Yeah.
part in the pupils. So, the attention to detail to whoever, if it was a hoax, the attention to detail was phenomenal.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, just gonna, I'm not sure how much time we have for this first
Oh,
part.
we
I'm
got
just
about
gonna
10
go.
minutes for this segment.
Okay. Well, there was a huge other con I mean, the trouble with this story, James, there's so much to it, but there was another controversy, because there was this other piece of footage that was marketed beforehand. Well, it was kind of not marketed. It was a piece of tent footage with a bit of skullduggery going on, where there was this really poor quality film that either Ray had asked someone to see if they could make something comparable to it, just to see. Because he was in the process. He waited 2 years. You have to remember, 1992. He didn't get the footage apparently till December 94. And I think he was telling some people about this. And he supposedly he commissions this other tent footage, which is, I think Robert Kiviat did a whole program on this to say, oh, the alien autopsy debunked. But it wasn't actually the alien autopsy footage. It was just this other piece of footage that was commissioned, and it was really poor quality. And it was filmed in a barn in Milton Keynes here in England, and it was just real poor quality, and it was used in some videos here in England, but it has nothing to do with the alien autopsy footage, so I won't waste my time talking about that. But yet some research will keep banging on about this as being connected to the main footage, but this wasn't. I think Ray himself may have been fooled, but like I say, Volker Spielberg put up the money. They did this TV show, Fact or Fiction. Cyril Recht was on there. And it generated huge views. You have to remember that the UFO subject, I don't think they ever seen anything like this sort of, the publicity it got at the time. I don't know if you were into the UFO subject
Yeah, I
back
was,
in back.
and just to interject, it hit the UFO community like a bombshell. I would say it had more of an impact even as far as all coming out at once and generating all this interest, even more so than Bob Lazar, because Bob Lazar had come out in '89 and the internet had not really taken off by then. So
Sure.
when the Alien Autopsy film came out, it generated a lot of interest. And the people that I spoke to at the time, veteran researchers like Bill Hamilton and others, I for one, and we were convinced, a number of us, that it was a genuine article. And what made it particularly convincing was the testimony of the expert witnesses in the Fact or Fiction video, the the special effects people,
Yeah.
the people of that
Yeah.
caliber were talking about how they wouldn't be able to replicate that, and the way the blood flowed after the incisions and whatnot. In the time we got left with this first segment, Colin, could you encapsulate what Santilli said in that video clip, which we weren't able to get good audio out of, as well as what Colin Andrews said? Because Colin is a key figure in this, not really well known, as he pointed out. And I've always held a high regard for Colin Andrews as well, all the harassment and abuse that he suffered.
Sure.
So, yeah, what was their take on
Well, he
this?
was like, they were validating it. Ray just recounted his story about how he brought back some of the images, to try and market it. And he actually ran Kodak from the cameraman's house at the time. So when he was first viewing it, he actually ran Kodak, and they told him about how this film stock would have some symbols on it. And by giving the symbols from the film stock in the cameraman's house, the Kodak immediately told him it was either 1927, 1947, or 1967. So Ray was kind of saying, well, the cameraman said it was 47. So it was things such as that. And just he was talking about how they were going to market it, and they were going to bring out a video. Well, actually, I've got the video here. This is the original video, and I'll just share you my. On a, oh, I don't know why I'm just doing it. I don't need to share it. I've got it right in front of me. So that's the original video that was marketed. It cost £33, which was a lot of money back in '95. I bought this. You could only buy it on mail order. But what's interesting about this video, and it's quite unique, and you can't get it on the internet, is that if you watch the alien autopsy footage now, it's all sort of streamed together. But what's interesting here, for every of the real film reels that they had like film reel numbers. So if you watch this video, it's actually got all the pieces, all the like a minute, because they had these cameras, the Filmo cameras, were military cameras. So the cameraman, remember on the statement, he was wearing this full protection suit, but he actually, he didn't seem to care after a while. He actually took that off because it was tampering. Because people said, oh, it's all very unprofessional, it goes in and out. But you have to remember, he was wearing that suit for parts of that footage. And these were the problem reels, remember. There was literally hours of this footage, and there's obviously quite a lot of segments missing. But if you watch this video, you will actually see all the reels listed. And I think I posted this on my Facebook group. You can actually watch it. I just did a recording of it a few years ago. But it's interesting because it does mention all the different film reels rather than the finished edited product. So it does sort of come tie in, but each reel I think could only shoot up to a minute, minute and a half. And people have been very critical about some things, like it's black and white. Why is it black and white? Clearly we did have some color footage. There is some claims that there was a shortage of black and white footage, but also cameraman apparently also said that there was a still photographer that was taking photos in between him reloading and stuff like that. So whether various organs that were taken out of the body were then filmed or photoed by this stills cameraman, there's another aspect to it. We do see, like I say, the guy in the surgeon's window who isn't wearing a protective mask, obviously, because he's here and he's looking, examining. And if you look at the microphone, there's clearly, you can see their hand motion. They are talking. It's a silent film. So another question, maybe, where's the audio? But there's at least two surgeons. I think at one point in the room, there's three people coming. There's three different people in the room, plus the cameraman, plus the guy in behind the window. So, there's a lot going on there. There's all the stuff, like I say, from 1947. But yeah, sorry, going back to your original
Just
question
hold that
about.
thought. Just also comment on the fact that one of the criticisms was that they took it out of context and claimed that Santilli had doctored the footage. But what Santilli and company had actually done was save the footage, because the film within the canister had not been exposed to oxygen for the atmosphere for all that
Yeah.
time. And then upon taking it out of the canister, you were having issues with the acetone and what have you. Can you talk a bit about that? That they had to actually stop playing it, because the more they played it, the more it was being destroyed. So they
Yeah.
had to save what they had, essentially.
Yeah, I think they said it was like oxidized or something. I mean, even like there was a reel that actually, because they actually even showed some of the film canisters, and it actually, you can see on these film canisters, I could actually show that image. I've got it on my presentation. I'd have to see if I, but they said, yeah, there was some issues, and there was like problems with the, there was one that said the Truman footage on it. And apparently that was, that would later say, well, you know, they weren't able to get images from that, you know, conveniently, in some might say. But that whole Truman story is, you know, very controversial. Apparently he was supposedly there. But yeah, later on in 2006, when the story changed, Ray then said there was a, I mean, I don't know if you want me to go into that part of the story now. What he kind of changed his story in 2006, saying that that all the film had like degraded, and he had to reconstruct it. So he kind of changed his story basically in 2006, saying, well, you know, there's a percentage, a small percentage of real stills in there, and then we recreated it. So it was even, I, you know, I was always under the impression that obviously he'd been got at by that point 10 years later, and he kind of had changed the story now to say it was a recreation, albeit some
Under
of the originals.
duress, perhaps.
Yeah. I mean, if you, there was a famous, there were some documentaries that came out in April 2006 here in England called Amen Investigates. So that was, I mean, it was kind of like, I mean, I always thought it was, you know, a cover story basically. But they did play up to that whole degradation of the film footage even more so, because, you know, I always found Santilli sincere and on, you know, in the early days, but as of when the cover story came out, you know, in my correspondence with him, it's been, you know, kind of strange and difficult in considering, you know, that I actually believe, you know, the footage is real, which it was kind of, you know, why would he, you know, be so reluctant to talk about it nowadays? He very rarely does, he very rarely does interviews as such. But we can get into, because there was
Yeah,
some more
hold that thought,
controversy.
because I want to get more into that in the second segment. Because,
Sure.
the changing of the story and the cover story, if you will, perhaps, and I'm just speculating, he was subject to some degree of duress or external malign influence, and which was the cause of that. But anyhow, we reached the end of our first segment with our guest Colin Wolford. Colin, can you tell our viewers and listeners how they can find you on the internet?
Yeah, so basically, I'm really just on. I have a Facebook group which I started on 2015 called, you can just search Alien Autopsy Analysis. That's been up there since, yeah, May 2015. I was actually interested in it long, obviously long before that, but I just felt like it had to redress some of the claims that were out there. So that's the only, that's the main way that people contact me. I did have a YouTube channel, but I, you know, I wouldn't, I didn't. I've only ever uploaded a couple of videos as such on there. There's another part to that story I can maybe get into in part two, what happened to my YouTube and some of the other experience I had once I started investigating, which sort of brought the dark side of ufology.
Let's
Kind
hear about that in the second segment.
of, yeah.
And to our dear listeners out there, if you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up, and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next segment.